shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed. Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in. Cynthia Yanoff is a wife, mom of three, blogger, and the host of Mesmerized podcast. She loves Jesus, her family, foster care, and having lots of people around as often as possible. Cynthia believes God is found in the real life, everyday moments of parenting, marriage, friendships, and everywhere in between. We've been interviewed by Cynthia in the past, and it was fun to turn the microphone on her today. Enjoy this conversation.
Cynthia.
Oh my gosh, you guys, we're here.
We're here. It is such a treat to get to sit down and talk with you. Between the two of us, we've probably done six interviews.
I bet
with
you we've done six or seven.
I would guess.
I mean, we're 2 seconds in. I just knocked my water over and I'm grabbing my phone. So I feel like we're off to a very strong start.
I agree, totally. But it is so fun for us to get to turn the tables on you and get to ask you questions.
Oh my gosh. You guys. Okay, well, I was going to read you a text, but I'll just tell you basically what it said. I was telling one of my dear friends about coming here to do this, and I'm like giddy. I'm a little nervous, and I'm never nervous. And my friend texted me, and she's like, tell them how much I love them, and that I got $100,000 worth of therapy from an $18 book that I bought from you guys. And I was like, that is a perfect way to say it. Like, what you guys do is unbelievable. And so it's taking everything I have not to be like, let me ask y'all some questions, because I interview you guys a lot. So here we are.
We get to ask you all the questions. So let's start off with you talking a little bit about your family, about the work you're doing.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for asking. Yes. So, you know, I used to be a lawyer back in the day and did that for many years. And then like the Lord kind of called me out of it, not directly into what I'm doing now, but now I podcast, which is why I get to be with you guys, which is so fun. I podcast. I just have written my first commercial like trade book. And then,
which is called
Life is Messy. Oop. God is Good.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, so that's super fun. And I speak, do all the normal stuff. But it's interesting because I went from being a lawyer to, and I was like, oh gosh, man, that was a waste of education. Sorry, mom and dad. And then I realized, you guys, a podcast is literally just a deposition. You just ask questions and listen to people and ask another one, right? And
well, so, let me say, I've done a deposition not on that side of it. And you're much kinder when you interview people than a deposition ever feels.
Much more enjoyable deposition.
Yes. I think we did that together way back in the day.
Right. So, anyway. And then I have, I've been married for 23 years to Mike. And then we have three kids. Everyone brace yourself. We have a college kid. We have a high school kid, and we have a first grader. So, yeah, so we've got a big span.
And the age difference is what between this?
Like
two and three?
Okay, so 16 and 7. So, okay. Yeah. So there's a pretty, and then the oldest one is 20. So, wow. Yeah, it's been an adventure, but yeah, yes. A late adoption in the game. Aww. And so, I mean, God's got a sense of humor. You're going to like be doing like room mom and menopause like at the same time. It's great.
That
good
is
stuff,
awesome.
Everyone. Good
yes.
stuff.
Yes.
We're going to circle back to those amazing kiddos, but we want to first talk about your book. So
yeah.
I'm going to say the title again because I love the subtitle too. Life is messy, God is good, sanity for the chaos of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And will so you talk good. About just why you wrote the book and what you hope folks will take from it?
Yeah. You guys, as someone who grew up in church, I think I got to this point in my life where I felt like there's the God things and then there's everything else. Mm-hmm. And how things had to be cleaned up and look a certain way in order for it to be meaningful or significant. And I realized like the thing is that 90% of my life is not cleaned up. It is not on script. Definitely not when you have kids like that. The wheels fell off absolutely on that. And so then I'm like, okay, how is it, like, if we're going to have a theology, we've got to have a theology that meets up with reality. Mm. And so, like, if what I'm learning on Sunday doesn't mean anything Tuesday in carpool, then we got a little issue. So, and for me, the last several years have been this thing like, God, I know you're in this. How do I see this? Teach me to see you in all the things. Mm-hmm. And teach me to not feel like it has to be cleaned up and perfect and postable before I can actually say it's significant. And so I want it to be real. That's all I kind of know is be real, lay it out there, but also just really laugh. And so my prayer is that it's really funny and real and like whatever it is, like life is messy. It is off script. And so let's figure out like where is God in that? And how does like what we believe, where does our theology, where does it intersect with the reality of every day?
You know, as you're saying that, that's so funny because that has certainly been my experience of you. Every conversation I've had, you are so real and you're so funny.
Oh my gosh.
But at the same time, which I'm so grateful for.
Thank you for saying that.
That's
you know,
very true.
It reminds me, if I can share a little something with you, I have a friend who, I tell the story sometimes, and I think it's just a metaphor of life for all of us, but she was in charge of like helping new families at the school get to know existing families, and she had this pool party and invited all these new families and existing families, and so she was in her suit, bathing suit, because she was getting in and out of the pool, and near the end, someone came up to her and said, you know, hey, your bathing suit seems a little bit see-through, and she's like, oh, it's just Old Navy, don't worry about it. Kind of laughed about it. Well, she went to at the end of the party to go change back into her dry clothes, and she realized that morning she had put on her tankini top, never put on her bottom. She was wearing her granny panties at the pool party. The
no,
entire,
Yes, she did,
you guys. And I tell you the story because it's so horrifying, right? But it's kind of this metaphor, I think, for life and kind of why I write the book. Like, there are parts of you in life that you didn't maybe even know you had, much less planned on parading about town, right? Like, isn't that the truth of it?
But that's so true.
That's my hope, is that we can kind of laugh at these. Like, there's some stuff that came along I didn't know I was going to do. I didn't know I was going to react that way.
Yes.
I didn't know my marriage was going to look certain ways and my kids and my parenting. And honestly, some really rough patches in the faith, too, where I've had to step back and be like, okay, this wasn't planned, but God's good.
Yes. Well, that ties into the next question I would love to ask about, where do you see the goodness of God in the messiness of parenting?
Yeah. I think the goodness of God comes in perspective. I mean, I think now that I've been a mom, and it's kind of fun because I get another crack at it, right? But we're all these years later into parenting. I'm 20 years in. And now I've got like a first grader again. And like, I died on so many ridiculous hills, you guys, that I'm like, why did I care about that?
Yeah.
But I would say this for me with, I think... my middle son, he's in high school now, but when he was like in kindergarten or first grade, I got a call that they were putting him in the reading club, and he wasn't reading well, and I like lost my mind. Now, you guys can have a whole nother podcast talking about don't do this, people, but like when they called, the teacher like very innocuously like, he's behind in reading, we're going to get him extra help. I heard, oh my gosh, like he can't read, so he won't make it in this school, he's not going to graduate, and he'll never get a job, so like let's make him comfortable.
Right.
Like I went down this insanity road, you guys.
Yes.
And so then I went to go pick him up, and I have like tears in my eyes, and he jumps in the car happy. He's like, hey, best day ever. I got put in the reading club. And he explains all the great things his teacher have told him. And we're like, thank goodness she got to him before I got to him, right? Like,
great.
Thank goodness. But now all these years later, he's in high school. Everyone, he can read. So let's be thankful for that. But here's what I would say. The goodness of God in that is that during that time, I prayed and prayed and prayed that the Lord would take away his learning difficulties. I prayed that the Lord would make him such that he wasn't pulled out. He didn't stand out differently from other kids, that he didn't have to struggle on this. I prayed all these things. And now what I know, Those are the very things God has used to create him into who he is now.
Yes.
I would have stripped it away. Like, I didn't want that road. And like now when I'm like, he is different. He's a different kid because he works harder than anybody because he's always had to.
Yeah.
And he's empathetic and compassionate. All the things you know about these kids. And no, like the road hasn't been easy. There's been learning differences. There's just been so many challenges along the way. But I'm just so thankful. The goodness of God for me comes in being able to have the perspective to say, okay, thank you, Lord, for not stripping away what you were building in him, even though it didn't look like I wanted it to.
Mm.
I love your perspective
me
on
too.
That.
Thank
you.
Me too.
We have long said, we talk about a lot, just in all the years we've been doing this work, kids with learning challenges and kids with chronic illness are some of the most resilient kids out there. Yeah. And it's everything you name. Mm-hmm. Like, they wake up with more challenges every day. They have higher hills to climb. They have more hurdles to jump. And they end up being everything you said so often. Yeah. They're empathetic. They're compassionate. They're aware.
Absolutely.
I love the way you spoke to that and that reminder.
But I don't know if I could have heard it back then.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? That's the goodness of God and the perspective. Being able to look back and be like, oh, okay, if I could, you know. So if anybody needs to borrow that from me, let me offer you some perspective. If you can't see it in the moment, like, just trust a mom who's a normal, ordinary mom who's gotten it wrong more than she's gotten it right, but that God is good in this, and he's present, and he's faithful.
Yeah. I love that.
Thank you.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Okay, we want to ask you about the journey of fostering. We're so excited to have you talk some about that and would love to ask you just through that journey, what have you learned about yourself?
Yeah.
What have you learned about your kids? And what have you learned about God?
Right. You know, it's one of those things, like, when we felt the Lord was laying foster care in our heart, we were like, oh, surely not. Like, that's for, like, you know, the really spiritual people. And, like, we're not those people. Like, you know, we've got, like, you know, the dog that barks too much. We've got the kids that play select sports on Sundays. Like, we're, no, surely. But, you know, people say, like, how did you know you were called to it? And it's almost like, how would I have not known? It was that obvious. Like, when the Lord calls you to something, and for me, it's foster care. Whoever's listening, when the Lord's calling you to something, which he's calling us all to something, it becomes very obvious. Like, every mailer that came in was on foster care. I'm like, what is this? Why does the junk mail say foster care? Every sermon, every podcast.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my goodness. And so my husband and I, very drag your feet-ish, if you will. I mean, I remember literally saying to my husband, I just don't know if I can do all the forms. And my husband's like, yeah, you were a lawyer. I bet you can. I was like, oh yeah, good point. I bet I can. Now that you mentioned, I think I can do forms. But the beauty of that was, like, we went into it, and I always kind of just sum it up this way. I could talk for 3 days about all that was involved, but I always sum it up this way. We went into it scared of what it was going to be. We were scared of it financially, spiritually, emotionally. What was it going to do our bio kids? I mean, you tell someone you're going to do foster care, you guys, and everyone has a cousin's best friend's aunt that had a foster kid that nearly killed him or something.
Isn't
like
that
horrific.
The truth?
And
yes.
You're like, what?
Please don't tell me that.
Don't tell me that story. But we went in scared of what it was going to do to us, and we came out as a family scared of who we'd be if we had not done it. Like,
wow.
That's what God does when he calls you into these things. Like, you can drag your feet right on into it. I mean, I think that the Lord can still honor that. I know he can because I've done it. And in the midst of it, he changed us. And all the places that I would have wanted to keep my kids out of, all the parts of town we hadn't been in before, we were in, sitting in CPS offices with kids with everything they own in a trash bag, watching kids waiting for parents that didn't come or did come but were not well. And watching all of that, praying over a crib of a baby we didn't even know, just crying out for him. Like, you're not the same on the other side of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much to say. But I would also just say, like, in the midst of it, God's there. And yes, we ended up adopting, as we know now, we adopted. But we got the kiddo. Yes, that's amazing. But really, we got God. Like, we got a version of him we had never really, I don't think, sought after and had. And it was incredible.
Wow. Well, so parents who are listening who might be considering fostering, what encouragement would you give them? What encouragement would you give parents who are in the midst of it and maybe
Yeah. I would say if you're praying about it and about foster care, you're thinking about it, if it's kind of light on your heart or any calling, whatever you're being called to, I would say my pastor says it best when he says God moves at the speed of your next yes. Mm. I think that's it. Like God moves at the speed of your next yes. And I would just say, listen, it doesn't have to be a like resounding yes. Like I just said, we gave a reluctant yes. We're kind of like, okay, Lord, I guess. And God is faithful in that and he will show up. And so I just want to encourage you that if you're seeking after the God things, then it's time to do that. Like, get out there, do it. It's not an easy road. Everyone knows that. You just ask anyone. They're going to tell you it's not an easy road, but it's the right one. I would say if you're in the midst of it, one of the hardest places we walked was we were waiting to see if we're going to get to adopt him. We had had him a couple of years. He was family at this point. And it looked like he was going home. The CPS workers had said, have him packed up and ready to go. I mean, we're 19 months into this and we're devastated. Also knowing where he would go would be rough. And so I remember going and walking our neighborhood over to this bridge and just kind of getting quiet. And I was staying on this bridge in my neighborhood, weirdly enough, crying. I'm like, this is odd. But and I felt like the Lord just said, like, you need to walk down by that creek. And there's a little creek under there. So I walked down there. And all of a sudden, I remembered the Israelites and how they would always, like, when they crossed dry land, they would get stones and they would build altars, right? So they'd never forget what God had done. And in that moment, I felt like the Lord was like, you need to stack some stones. And so I literally, I've never done this before or after. I picked up a stone for when my husband nearly died from meningitis, but he's okay. And I picked up a couple stones for healthy kids. And I picked up a stone for a time we needed a new job and we got it. And I started stacking them. And I realized something in that moment. It wasn't stones that kept me from the hard, right? But it was stones of his faithfulness. Mm. And that's my encouragement. If you are in foster care, this is the key. I think we've got to know that God is not a remove the hardship kind of God all the time. Typically, he's not. He's a remember who I am God. And if he's the same yesterday and today and forever, you can trust him. And sometimes you just need to stack some stones and remember he's been faithful in the past. He'll be faithful in the present. Because that's who he is. That's his nature. And so I go back to that a lot. I go back to the times where he's been faithful. And I have to remind myself, I've got one right now that we still, my youngest, we cannot get him reading. And I have to be like, okay, if the Lord got him from where he was to our home, he's going to be able to manage this. Yeah. And so my encouragement for you is just like, if you're in the midst of foster care or whatever's hard, like have a long memory of who God is.
A long memory. I love that.
Gosh, and I love, I know, I'm thinking as you're talking, like, I want to remember what you just said. That was so profound. Like, he's not a remove the hard. He's a remember who I am. God, that's beautiful.
Thank you for that.
Well, in this season, we're talking about the ages and stages of development on the podcast.
Okay.
And would love to ask you, what has been one of your favorite stages so far and why?
Okay. I love the teenage years. Does anybody say this?
We love that you're saying it.
I love the teenage years. And you know why I love them? Bless their hearts. I mean, I've got a 16-year-old right now, and then I have one that just turned 20. But, I mean, they're weird and squirrely and at times disrespectful. Everything, you're like, what did my husband do wrong raising him? Surely it wasn't me, right? But especially, and I'm going to take a step further, having just taught my second one to drive, he's turned 16. I mean, there's nothing like it. Like these kids, I'll tell you what, like I'm with this kid, I'm trying to teach him to drive, and you get on the freeway and he's going like 20, and you're like, bro, you got to go faster. And then you get in your neighborhood and he's going like 60. And I'm like, what? What's going on? And then like you yell, like you've got to yield. And you know what you get from a 6-year-old? Your mama's got to yield.
No.
That's what I got. Literally got to yield. Mama has got to yield. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. But here's what I think I love the teenage years. It kind of goes back a little bit to what I said earlier. It's a perspective situation, I think, for me, because you're able to realize, like, when my daughter went to college, I went and opened her baby book. By the way, there's nothing in it. I thought I was like that great scrapbook mom. Apparently, I'm not. But then I did her baby book and scrapbook, and I went through it. And as I was flipping through the pages of it, and this is why I love teenagers, you can look back and I can be like, oh my gosh, I remember, like, I was crazy. I had my husband stand out all night to wait to get us in the air quote, the right preschool. And that was a big deal. Oh, that was a big deal to me. And big deal, public school, private school, big deal. Did we make this team? Big deal. Were we in the right friend group? Junior high, big deal. You know, did we make the play? High school, even college, did we get in the right school? Do we have the right ACT score? Well, you know what? Like now, you know, you can look back. I flipped through that scrapbook and I'm like, you know what? the big things weren't the big things. It's the small things that were the big things. Mm. The small things are the ones that matter. Those are the places where the DNA of your family is developed. And I am so grateful now because I can see their personalities. And I can see what God's been crafting in them. And I can see that all those things that I thought were the huge, big things, they weren't. And the times that we just drove back and forth to carpool and just had real conversations, those mattered. The times when my kids weren't invited, like they felt like the only kid that didn't get invited to the Friday night party, like those were the moments where we grew together, where they knew God better because of it. And I'm just so grateful for that. So I would say that's been, that's what I love about the teenage years is the perspective of it and being able to see what really matters. They're still crazy, though. Try, you know, trying to teach people to drive. You're about to meet Jesus. I mean,
mm-hmm. What would you say, thinking back, has been the most challenging?
I think for me, I love a baby, by the way. I love a good baby. But I think for me, the younger years were really hard. And I think the younger years were hard. And it might be a little of the control freak in me, you guys. But I think they were hard for me because I couldn't see how it was going to turn out. I didn't know. I was just like... I was majoring on the minors almost, you know what I'm saying? And that was really hard for me. I have this friend, Kimberly, who when her kids were 5 and 3, one morning, like she felt like the Lord was just saying, teach them to call 911, teach them how. And she was like, well, now this isn't good. Because you guys know, like you teach a little one how to call 911, you could take a shower and the paramedics are waiting for you when you get out, right? Like, you don't know. And so she kind of went about her day and the Lord like kept laying on her heart, teach them. So she went in and got a whiteboard and she wrote 911, got her cell phone, showed this little ones, little girls, how to do this, said this, you know, this are the questions I'll probably ask you. Here's how you answer. Do you know your address? And we do open the door for strangers if it's the parent, you know, went through the whole thing. Couple hours later, she had a seizure, her first one ever, a massive seizure.
Wow.
And her 5-year-old ran back to the game room, found that whiteboard, brought it back with the little sister. They got the phone. They called 911. The paramedics came. My friend's doing fine now. But I tell you this because I think this is the thing about parenting. Like, you've got a whiteboard you are riding with your parenting journey. And like you have this opportunity to get in front of the Lord and say, what do you want this to say? What do you need me to be about? And what's hard about it is sometimes it makes sense in the moment, but most of the time it doesn't. And just like Kimberly's like, why am I teaching these kids to do this right now? She didn't understand. Her kids surely didn't understand what this exercise was. But the Lord had a plan. And I think when I think of challenging and parenting, I think that's it. I think the Lord is trying to write a story through our lives and through the lives of our kids and giving us critical, life-saving information. We just don't exactly know what to do with it. And I think that's why the younger years have been harder for me, just trying to decipher through that and be like, gosh, the culture's all doing this. The world's all doing this. The world's telling me that good moms, air quote, good moms do it this way. And I'm trying to figure out what does a godly mom do?
Mm.
Love that. Great. What would you say is some of the best parenting advice you've been given?
Yeah. Okay, the quick one is that my mom always says, if you're going to laugh about it in a year, laugh now, which I think is great
advice.
Are you like, I'm going to laugh someday, I'm going to laugh now. But I think for me, it's good parenting advice, but it's also the biggest lie I've believed in parenting is probably that we're defined by the success and failures of our kids. And I think that is such a heavy burden for our kids to carry. You guys know this more than anyone. When we're trying to let the success and failures of our kids define us, I think it's crippling for them. And the thing is who gets to decide what's a success, right? Like the world's definition of success, like are the things that are measurable. And so you think about success, like I know, like if you send a kid to college, you know what the world calls successful. You need good grades every single class. You need to be able to do all these things, play the trumpet, be the president of the club, like all the things that are measurable. How fast can you run around the track? But then the other thing, you guys, is what God would say success would be the things the most God-honoring are not measurable. You know, like take yourself off the text string. That's not nice. Picking a different friend group because they're making bad decisions. Sitting by someone in the cafeteria. And so who gets to decide success? Like, are we lining that up with what the Lord calls success? I think the other thing is failures. I think we can't allow ourselves to be defined by these success and failures because we don't know what's a failure in the moment. My son, Brett, the same one, I'm kind of picky on him today, but the same one that had the reading issues years ago. He was in high school and was playing football last year, and this was the year he was going to get to play a lot, and he didn't get put in. The end of the season, I mean, we all felt like this was a failure. I mean, nobody was articulating it, but it was clear. And we went to the football banquet and they're just handing out all the awards to all the kids that were amazing. I'm glad they were amazing. But I was like, oh, this is hard for him and all of us. But the very last award, the coach called up my son and I'm like, got the wrong kid, coach. He wasn't playing. And he started talking about the scout team. And, you know, the scout team, he didn't say it this way, I am. But the scout team's the one that gets the real team ready, right? Mm. They're the ones that take the same hard hits. They spend the same amount of time and they do all the lifting and all that. But they're not out there on Friday night. They're getting the real team ready. And he named my son the VIP of the scout team. Mm. And I realized something in that moment. Like, this is the parenting advice I kind of got from this football situation, was that, like, he took a perceived failure and he named it a success.
Mm.
And as parents, we've got to be in the business of taking perceived failures and naming them a success where we can. Mm. Because we don't know what the Lord's going to do with it. But we do know that all things are for his good. Right? Our good, his glory, really. And so, like, we need to be the parents that are out there naming scout team for our kids, and we're taking the places that may look like a failure, and we're trusting God to make him a success, whatever success looks like to the Lord, not to culture or to us. Mm-hmm. And we need to be doing that for other kids. Like, I think we need to be looking around. The kids are struggling, kids that are learning differences, or they're having whatever their issues are, emotional difficulties, whatever it is, and be like, you know what? I'm going to start naming scout team for you, and I'm going to start naming some perceived failures, some successes.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. I keep circling back around to, I just am so grateful for your perspective and the perspective that every parent is getting who's listening, grandparent, aunt, uncle, anybody. I mean, just, and your humor, but your, the years that you've been doing this. I mean, I just, God well, obviously has you for such a time as this with well, this book coming out to be able to speak to.
Thank you.
Yeah, where thank everybody
you.
Is.
I'm not sure my first grader's teacher feels the same way, but thank you, sister. If you could call her later and explain, we're failing on sight.
Be happy to. Happy to. Will you tell folks where they can find you?
Yes. And it's Cynthia Yanoff. That's my social.
Spell Yanoff for them.
Yeah, you guys. Y-A-N-O-F. That's okay. My social. That's my website. Yeah, so anywhere Cynthia Yanoff is where you can find me. My podcast is called Mesmerized, has two S's, mess, because we talk a lot about just keeping it real. Like, life is messy, God is good, like the book, podcast. So I'd love for you to check out Mesmerized. Cynthia Yanoff, thank you for asking.
Yes,
absolutely. Okay, we like to end with something fun and food related.
Oh, y'all are my people. You are my people.
Yes, we've got a two-part question.
Okay, let's go.
So part one, queso or guac. Part two, what's your favorite kind of taco?
Okay. Now, I need to know something. Do you ask every guest those two questions?
Yes.
It's that specific food.
Yes.
I love that about you because, like, is there any other food?
No. Right. No.
No. Okay, good.
Not.
Okay. I don't want to be that person, but are we okay with the queso that has guac in it?
Oh, we just had it
in Austin, Bob Armstrong.
Yes. Okay, because I'm a Texas girl, so that's, I don't know if I can pick, but I pick the queso with the guac in it.
And we pick you for that reason.
Thank you. I'll be here all week. Okay, and then taco, I'm from Texas, so I have to say a brisket taco, because we're very serious about our meat.
Yes.
And so I would say brisket taco, but yeah. Am I allowed to ask y'all real quick, what's your taco?
I mean, I got to do a really fun trip to Mexico not long ago, and so I had some great fish tacos. So right now I'm probably on a little bit of a fish taco kick.
Yeah.
I'm never wrong to be on a fish taco.
No.
Okay.
No. What would you say, David?
I would say, so currently we have a place in Nashville called Lady Bird Taco. Their slogan is a little Texas in Tennessee. It is the closest we can get to the magic happening in Texas. And I love to your pick a brisket taco that I add some scrambled eggs to for breakfast.
I see no problem with that. I mean,
thank you for supporting
that. Why wouldn't
you
put an egg on that?
It's fantastic. So that's their lunch taco, but I turn it into breakfast and it's magical.
Yeah. I love some Tex-Mex. I'm not going to lie. And I grew up in El Paso. It's on the border.
Oh, wow.
You know, Texas. And so I grew up with, like, real Mexican food.
You did.
But I like Texas Tex-Mex too, so. Y'all are the best. I love ending on food.
You are a delight. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
It's so fun to be with you.
I don't think there's a bigger fan. I mean, everybody says that, I know, but I'm not sure y'all have bigger fans than me. Cynthia from the stalker from Dallas.
No,
who loves you
too.
We're
crazy about you.
We have been for a lot of years.
So
thanks for having
you.
Me.
Thanks for being here.
If you are enjoying the Raising Boys and Girls podcast, click follow on your podcast listening app to subscribe and not miss an episode.
Join us next time for another episode where we'll bring you help and hope on your journey of raising boys and girls.